The Democrat Party has become too extreme to be trusted with power. Their radical policies are a danger to your family and to your country.
Hello. Welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. For Wednesday, the 30th day of September in the year 2020, it's the morning after. The morning after the first debate of three. Although the liberal press is asking, should there be any more debates? Interesting. Trump Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany posts to social media this morning, should there be any more debates? The liberal Biden-loving fake news media suddenly asks in unison. That is not a question you ask if your candidate wins. Oh, an interesting night last night. We'll take a look at it. That'll be part of the podcast today, not the entire podcast, because do you really want to relive the train wreck that was last night? It was brutal. It was hard to watch. It was, for a rational, honest thinking person, last night's debate was an exercise in futility. It was just horrible. I don't think there's any other way I can actually put it. It was just horrible. But we shall dive into that for just a moment or two, coming up in just a few. Okay? All right. But first up, I gotta say, R.I.P. Rest in peace, Helen Reddy. Yep, Helen Reddy passed away overnight last night. Woke up this morning to find out that she had passed away, along with this guy. Yeah, you may remember this. If you're an old fart like I am, you might remember Baby Baby Don't Get Hooked on Me.
I ain't ready for family time.
Yep, Mac Davis also passed away. So Mac Davis and Helen Reddy, who were two huge stars in the music business, they were just huge. We lost both of them last night. And it's just kind of a sad day for those of you who remember their music. So.
Baby, baby, don't get hooked on me.
Yeah. Man, oh man. And you know what? I hear that song now, and you know what I think of? Big Bang Theory. Howard Wolowitz. Singing that song in the backseat of the car. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, so farewell to Mac Davis and Helen Reddy. They've gone on to their reward. Kind of a sad day for music fans from that genre, from that age, from that decade. I'm looking for the right word. I think decade is the word. Oh, man. And in other news, good news for iOS users, people who have iPhones, iPads, and the like. iOS 14.0.1 is now available, so it is safe to update your phone. I have always been an early adopter. I've always been one who just embraces the risk and just goes ahead and, woohoo, new update. And I just go ahead and slam it on there and, you know, take my chances. And for the first time, I have to say, for the very first time ever, when iOS 14 hit, I regretted my decision because there were some definite problems with iOS 14. Just functionality problems, not problems with certain apps, just problems. Now, in the past, every time there's been a major number upgrade, you know, like from 12 to 13 or 13 to 14, there have always been reports of bugs, issues with the update affecting certain functions or certain applications. And I really never have had issues with anything I've read about other people having issues. I've read about other people having struggling to get by because suddenly something they use all the time doesn't work as expected. And there have been growing pains as the way apps are laid out changes, or the appearances change a little bit, or certain functionality changes. And people just get all up in arms. Why did you change it? I liked it the way it was. And yeah, to be honest, there have been a couple of those times when I've thought, wow, man, you're making this harder than it should be. But you bite your lip and you move forward. But never have I had actual system-wide functionality issues until iOS 14. And I had issues with that. I would be in Twitter or Facebook or really any number of programs, practically anything, and suddenly I couldn't scroll. The screen would lock up. Nothing would respond. And Facebook, in particular, Facebook would crash. It would just crash, and I would have to restart it in order to be able to use it. And I've never had that issue. Never had that issue with iOS in the past. And suddenly, I felt like, I'm going to make some people mad here, I felt like a Droid user. And please, I have friends who are diehard Android fans, and they won't use anything else, and they hate Apple for whatever reason. But generally, they are people who, one, don't want to spend that much on a phone, and two, want to tinker. They want to be able to adjust and tinker and make things change to the way they want them to, or to run apps the way they want to, or they want to do things that are kind of chancy. And that's fine. I have been there. I used to be a PC guy too, and I loved modifying, and I loved tinkering, and I loved getting into the inner works and making the computer look and run the way I wanted it to. And you can do that with a PC. You can't do that with a Mac as easily. You can, but you have to be you really have to be dedicated in order to do it. But generally, Mac users see the Mac as a tool. You open it up and it runs. It does what you want it to do. You're not there to tinker with it and make it your toy. It serves a function in your life, and you don't want to have to tweak it to make you happy, which is what I did for all those years in the PC world. And I look at it as the PC versus the Mac, with iOS versus Android. And Android is coming off a long way. In fact, I'm very impressed by what I've seen from Android in recent years. I have an Android tablet I use with my drone. I bought it because I could get an Android tablet cheap, and it runs the operating system well. It very rarely has any issues. I haven't had any major issues with it, but I use it just now and then, not on a daily basis. But this particular version, 14, iOS 14, was riddled with issues, and yesterday they issued 14.0.1, I updated everything, all my devices, and everything is fine now. I haven't had a lockup. I haven't had a reboot. I haven't had any issues. I haven't had I haven't had a Facebook or Twitter crash, and everything seems to be fine as of last night. So, if you've been waiting to update, now you can. I just wanted to throw that out there because there are a lot of folks who use Apple devices. You've got your Apple Watch, you've got your iPhone, you've got, you know. And if you did update on 14, you suffered like I did, because it was a mess. But all is better now, and hopefully things will be better from this point forward. Steve Jobs would not have let iOS 14 be released. There are those who would have said there are other versions he wouldn't have allowed to release either, which is probably true. But Steve Jobs would not have let iOS 14 hit the streets. He would not have. He would have demanded much more thorough testing, much more thorough bug fixes. He never would have allowed it to hit the street. Wouldn't have happened. And that's one reason I miss Steve Jobs. Well, last night, let's see, we've got about 4 minutes, 4.5 minutes to get started in this, and we'll pick up after the break, okay? So we won't just dive into this and stop at the break, because we need to deal with last night's debate. It was painful to watch. And not because Donald Trump did a bad job or Joe Biden did a good job. It was painful to watch because it was more like a running argument with someone trying to keep people civil. than it was a debate. And I at times I almost felt sorry for Chris Wallace, and then I stopped feeling sorry because it was clear that he was biased. Chris Wallace is a liberal. He is a registered Democrat, and he hosted a debate on Fox News last night, and his leanings showed. And now he's facing some intense backlash for what was widely deemed as bias in the debate in the favor of Democrat Joe Biden and against Republican President Donald Trump. One of the issues Wallace was called out for the most was how he appeared to let Biden interrupt Trump, but would jump in to interrupt Trump when Trump would talk over Biden. I saw this happen many times, as did others, and they commented on social media. Fox News host Brian Kilmeade even noted the discrepancy. He called it out on social media. He wrote, "Why is Biden allowed to interrupt and Trump is not?" Fox News contributor Andy McCarthy wrote, "I love Chris Wallace, but he should get out of the way." McCarthy added, "Biden doesn't support the Green New Deal." Oh, Wallace got that out of him? No, Trump did. Oh, well. Did Wallace clarify what parts of the Green New Deal Biden is against? No. Needed to move on. And then he adds, Chris Wallace jumps in a second time when Biden is having trouble with Trump's questioning. And that was something that did happen quite a bit when Joe Biden was having trouble clarifying a position or answering what Trump had posed to him, because he would say, "What about this, Joe?" And aside from going laughing derisively every time Trump scored a hit on Biden, there was that laugh. He would smile and shake his head and laugh every time Trump scored. And I noted it on social media last night, and people responded, "Yep, you're right." More people than I noticed it. Fox News host Greg Gutfeld said it was not good when Wallace reportedly laughed with Biden. Bill O'Reilly, who used to be a colleague of Wallace's, wrote on Twitter, quote, good line from Trump. He tells Chris Wallace he's debating him, not Joe. And he did say that. He said, "Well, it looks like I'm debating you instead of Joe. Can't say I'm surprised." Ooh. O'Reilly adds, Chris Wallace doesn't have the facts at his command about the Ukraine payments made to Biden's son that Trump brought up. Big mistake by Mr. Wallace. Attorney Harmeet Dhillon wrote on Twitter, Chris Wallace is a disgrace. Republicans need to stop allowing the slanted media to have any role in debates in future years. James Woods, who is a star on Twitter, wrote, Chris Wallace is shamelessly biased. It's a beautiful demonstration of fake news in action. I'm actually glad it's happening because you can see it for yourself. Journalist Yashar Ali, who was Hillary Clinton's co-chair on her 2008 presidential campaign, wrote on Twitter that there was no doubt that Wallace is not doing a good job as a debate moderator. So you see, it wasn't just Republicans and conservatives who were noticing what was going on. It was also liberals. Newsweek editor Josh Hammer on Twitter wrote, just an inexcusable effort tonight from Chris Wallace. And I say that as someone who is generally a fan of his. And there's more. And we'll address more when we come back from the break. Last night, it was almost like a prize fight. And the referee was not doing his job. And coming to the aid of the underdog when the underdog was not having a good time of things. Not good. Not good at all. I don't know if you watched or didn't watch last night. If you did, you probably saw exactly what I saw. And what many others are noting. And we'll dig into more of it after the break, as this Wednesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast continues. Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. Back to what we were talking about. The story, the Daily Wire story, I've been quoting all these things from. They just basically pulled all the tweets and everything, and they compiled them all in one place, which makes it a lot easier than jumping around and finding clips and things like that. It's a good little resource. But I was scanning through social media earlier. James Woods tweeted last night. He said, two takeaways from tonight. Trump, I'll open the economy, and the vaccine is weeks away. Biden, I will close down the country again and stop hurricanes with electric cars. He's so right. He's absolutely right. Oh, man. Well, the Federalist co-founder Sean Davis wrote on Twitter, Chris Wallace is now reading Biden's energy plan back to him to remind Biden what's in his plan. I've never seen anything like this from a moderator. Chris Wallace is making very clear that his goal tonight is to run interference for Joe Biden. If he wants to be a deranged never-Trumper, that's his prerogative, but Wallace is doing everything in his power to tilt the election toward his preferred candidate. Everyone can see it. Ben Shapiro wrote on Twitter, Chris Wallace, over the course of the night, has moved from moderator to debater. Because he did. He actually faced off with the president on more than one occasion. Conservative commentator Jesse Kelly wrote on Twitter, okay, I don't generally nitpick moderators, but Chris Wallace is asking Joe Biden about the very fine people thing without bringing up that it's a flat-out lie. He's an absolute embarrassment. And let's dwell on this for just a moment. Jesse Kelly, whether you like him or not, is dead on target with this comment. Because Chris Wallace did ask Joe Biden about the very fine people statement. The very fine people statement has been debunked probably hundreds of times. The transcript of that particular appearance by the president, where those words are pulled from, has been public for quite some time. And he did not call the extremists who were there to have a fight in Charlottesville very fine people. He was talking about the people who honestly had a difference of opinion about taking a statue down or not taking a statue down. Not the people who came there to fight. And please make no mistake and make no excuses for those people. They came to fight. In fact, that particular day was arranged by someone who arranged it because he knew there would be a big fight. Those were not good people. The KKK, the Antifa people, those people, none of those people are good people. And the president never said they were. Never said they were very fine people. He was talking about people who had an honest disagreement about whether or not a statue should be left in place. That's who he was talking about. It's abundantly clear. It's blatantly obvious to honest people who just read the transcript of what he had to say that day. But to those who don't want honesty and who don't want transparency, they will continue to tell the very fine people lie, which reveals Chris Wallace's true intent. He does not want to see the reality, the truth, and the honesty of the situation. He is a liberal. He is a Democrat. Former acting director of National Intelligence, Richard Grenell, on Twitter said, Chris Wallace is supposed to be invisible. He isn't. He's off to a terrible start. Chris Wallace doesn't interrupt Joe Biden, he also said. Commentator Candace Owens on Twitter said, unbelievable. Every person in America knows these riots are being orchestrated by Black Lives Matter and Antifa. Chris Wallace asks the president to condemn white supremacists, but did not think to ask Joe Biden to condemn Antifa or BLM. She's also right about that. Because Chris Wallace focused on getting a condemnation out of the president, but not out of Joe Biden, for the people who are actually causing all the violence. The senior writer for Real Clear Investigations, Mark Hemingway, wrote, "Chris Wallace calling critical race theory racial sensitivity training is totally ignorant of what's being taught. It is racist and anti-American. Appalling." Once again, this is an absolutely true statement. Because Chris Wallace referred to critical race theory, which is nothing else but a Marxist tool for dividing people against one another. He referred to it as racial sensitivity training. It is nothing of the sort. Nothing. It is at its core racist. It is at its core anti-American. And Chris Wallace calls it racial sensitivity training, completely ignoring the reality of what it really is. Political commentator Harry Cacciatran on Twitter says, "Chris Wallace chuckling and joking with Biden during the debate mid-question is grossly unprofessional conduct from a moderator." Bingo. It was. Ann Coulter. You know Ann Coulter, conservative commentator. She wrote, "Every time Trump is nailing Biden, Chris Wallace interrupts. That's the next topic." How many times did you see that happen? Again and again. Because the president would turn, because the conversation was going that way, and he would drop a bomb on Joe Biden about one of his core weaknesses, and Chris Wallace would say, "Well, gentlemen, that's the next topic, so let's move forward with what we're talking about here." MSNBC host Joe Scarborough. He's no friend to conservatism or the president. He wrote, "Where's Chris Wallace? This is a disgrace." Former White House Dr. Ronny Jackson tweeted, "Fire Chris Wallace. He's an embarrassment to Fox News." Former CNN host Soledad O'Brien wrote, "Hello, Chris Wallace. Looking for a moderator here." What a frickin' mess. Leftist Mikhail Gillette wrote, "Dear Chris Wallace, you are a national embarrassment." Conservative Dana Loesch wrote on Twitter, "Never allow Chris Wallace to moderate another debate again. This was an absolute bleep show. The viewer wasn't even a secondary concern." She's right. Conservative commentator Kurt Schlichter, "Everybody hates Chris Wallace, and that's not, and no, that's not proof that he's good. It's proof that he sucks." What do you really think? Daily Caller editor-in-chief Jeffrey Ingersoll wrote, "Chris Wallace calling critical race theory racial sensitivity training is honestly effing sad. This bleep is not circa 1980s corporate HR seminars hurting whites only into white privilege indoctrination is not racial sensitivity, it's racial insensitivity." He's right. Conservative commentator Ali Beth Stuckey wrote on Twitter, "I generally like Chris Wallace. This is a hard debate to moderate, but it's just true that this debate is very clearly two against one." She's right. And Chris Wallace was in defense mode for Joe Biden for the entire 90 minutes. Political strategist Chris Barron wrote on Twitter, "Biden and Wallace won the debate. Don't try to spin me with some BS. Fox News just handed the most important debate in history to the left. And they did it on purpose. If you have one set of rules, you enforce it on all participants. Chris Wallace failed miserably." The Reagan Battalion wrote, "Joe Biden better buy Chris Wallace a beer after he saved his backside so many times tonight." National security expert David Reboy wrote, "Every time Trump is landing blows, Wallace comes to shut it down." I mentioned that before. That's absolutely true. Every time Trump was landing blows, two things happened. Joe Biden starts laughing. He smiles, shakes his head, and starts laughing like, that's just stupid. Every time when he's landing a blow, go back and watch it. It's on YouTube. Go back and watch it. Every time Trump scores, he scores a hit, Joe Biden does that same little laugh to shake it off. And Chris Wallace steps in and says, and changes the direction of things. Radio host Hugh Hewitt wrote, strong, strong, strong answer by the real Donald Trump, interrupted by Wallace. Quote, they were teaching people to hate our country, and I'm not going to let that happen. It was a defining moment. And once again, that's a true statement. Because Donald Trump stepping in and saying the truth, telling the truth about critical race theory, that these people were teaching people, teaching American citizens to hate our country. That's what critical race theory is all about. It's blaming all of the heartache and pain in our country on race. It's all about a victim class and victimhood. And it goes back to what we talked about the other day on Monday about the moral compass of the left. They don't have one. Everything they do is for a purpose. It's all rooted in Marxism. And when you see someone preventing someone on a debate stage from making that point, it's very clear where that moderator stands. He doesn't stand on the side of truth or honesty. He stands on the side of leftist thought. And as such, Chris Wallace, like him or not, failed at his job last night. Chris Wallace, rather than being a fair and impartial moderator, stepped in on the behalf and for the benefit of Joe Biden time and time and time again. He should never host another debate. Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. Good to have you along today. It is the Wednesday edition of the podcast, the Wednesday after the disaster that was the debate last night. And I'm, okay, hang on. I'm posting something to social media. Just give me just a second here because I want to share this with you as well, okay? All right, so let me click on post that. All right. Talk show host Michael Berry. He's out of Texas. I believe he's in Houston. Yeah, he's in Houston, Texas. He posted this morning, just now. Actually, when is that? Anyway, no, it was 10 hours ago, last night. He said, you'd be pissed off, too, if the FBI spent years illegally spying on you and trying to destroy you. You might not sit quietly and trust a biased moderator to hold accountable the former VP who directed it against you. So, yeah, I think I'd be amped up, too. And he says that, of course, in response to people saying, boy, the president sure is fired up tonight. Yeah, and he's right about that. The president should be fired up because Joe Biden was involved in all of the Russia investigation. He was behind a lot of it. And we're learning more about that every day. So the guy who is responsible for making your life a living hell for month after month after month, year after year, is standing on the stage with you, and you are expected to be civil? That's a bit of a stretch. A bit of a stretch. And speaking of all of that Russia stuff, Kevin Ryan over at Unbiased America has a little quick something from Facebook last night I wanted to share with you. He says, there's a major battle brewing over newly declassified intelligence suggesting that Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign created a plan in 2016 to frame then-candidate Donald Trump for Russian hacking. Yeah. The information was released this afternoon, speaking of yesterday, by Director of National Intelligence John Ratcliffe to Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Lindsey Graham as part of an ongoing investigation of the origins of the Russia investigation. It states that in July 2016, the U.S. became aware of Russian intelligence alleging that U.S. presidential candidate Hillary Clinton had approved a campaign plan to stir up a scandal against U.S. presidential candidate Donald Trump by tying him to Russian President Vladimir Putin and the Russians' hacking of the Democratic National Committee. The intelligence claimed there was an alleged approval by Hillary Clinton on July 26, 2016, of a proposal from one of her foreign policy advisors to vilify Donald Trump by stirring up a scandal claiming interference by Russian security services. The CIA briefed President Obama and other senior national security officials on the allegations at the time, and made an investigative referral to then FBI Director James Comey and Agent Peter Strzok, who was Deputy Assistant Director of Counterintelligence. Whether the Russian intelligence was fabricated or exaggerated as part of its then plan to sow havoc during the 2016 election is not known. But the date of the intelligence does correspond to a public relations blitz in late July 2016 by the Clinton campaign, alleging that Russia was helping the Trump campaign. On July 24th, for example, Hillary Clinton's campaign manager Robbie Mook went on CNN to allege that Russia leaked the hacked DNC emails in an effort to help Donald Trump win the election in November. The letter from Ratcliffe says that the intelligence community does not know if the Clinton campaign was behind the creation of the Trump-Russia collusion narrative, but Democrats are up in arms about today's revelations, claiming it's Russian disinformation. Senate Intelligence Committee Vice Chairman Mark Warner, the Democrat from Virginia, told reporters, "It's very disturbing to me that 35 days before an election, the director of national intelligence would release unverified Russian rumor intelligence." Nick Merrill, a spokesperson for Clinton, said in a text that the allegations were baseless BS. But DNI Ratcliffe shot back on the criticism later in the day, saying, "To be clear, this is not Russian disinformation and has not been assessed as such by the intelligence community. I'll be briefing Congress on the sensitive sources and methods by which it was obtained in coming days." For his part, Senator Graham asked why he released the unverified information, called it the ultimate double standard. He said, "They took the whole damn country through hell for 2.5 years, and is it far-fetched to believe that the Clinton campaign would do something like this after Christopher Steele?" No, it's not far-fetched to believe it. Actually, it's not far-fetched to believe literally anything of Hillary Rodham Clinton. It goes back to what I shared the other day from Dennis Prager. That is that the left has no moral compass. They literally will do anything and rationalize anything they do as good as long as it benefits the Democrat Party. They have no moral compass. And this particular incident is evidence of that, that they cooked this entire thing up, the whole Russia thing. They fed it to the news media, who, because the news media is constantly hungry for sensationalism, the news media just lapped it up like a thirsty dog. They took off with it. And the news media made it big. And people were talking about it everywhere. And your liberal friends, to this day, believe every word of it as though it were the gospel truth. Because that is who Hillary Rodham Clinton knew would carry her message forward. She knew they would embrace it. They wouldn't research it. They wouldn't look into it to see if it was possibly not true. She knew that they would go crazy. And they would do what they had to do, what she wanted them to do, I should say. It's a really sad thing. But it's a thing. I got to be honest with you. It's disheartening to see this stuff happening in the United States of America. It's disappointing. It's also frightening. Because when you know that one of the political parties has no moral compass and is willing to say anything and do anything in order to gain power and control over this nation, it's scary. And when you know that's true, and you look back over certain things about our nation that are ongoing, it becomes even more frightening, because you realize that these people with no moral compass, willing to do anything, say anything, these people have done things which have changed the face of this nation. They have infiltrated parts of our society that we normally would trust and not even question, such as education. People with no moral compass are dictating what is taught to our children. People with no moral compass, looking only for a desired outcome, are approving that your kids be taught things like critical race theory, that your children be taught lies about human sexuality and gender. They're planting seeds of confusion and doubt. They're planting seeds of absolute lies. And they know that when they do so, that some people will turn, they will believe it, they will embrace it, and they will continue to preach it for as long as they have breath. They manipulate people to their ends. And that is evil. And there is no other way to define it. And one of the things they're doing is they're focusing on the president's taxes. If I can change topics for just a moment or two. There's a story over at Newsmax.com. Let me see if I can. There we go. It's a story written by Dick Morris. Now, I'm not a big fan of Dick Morris. I think I don't have a whole lot of time for people who do what he does. But his observation on this deal with Trump's taxes, I think, is interesting, and it's worth considering. Here's what he says. Contrary to the false impression in the New York Times story, Donald Trump did not avoid taxes. He prepaid them. In 2016 and 17, he requested and got an extension to file his returns. As required, he made an estimated tax payment of $1 million in 2016 and $4.2 million in 2017. Then it turned out that he didn't owe that much in taxes, but rather than demand the money back, he let the IRS keep it and apply it to any future tax he owed. So, when he only paid $750 in taxes for the first 2 years of his presidency, it was because he had already overpaid during the two previous years and just reduced his payments by that amount. Over the longer term, Trump overpaid his taxes by $72 million. Because some of that overpayment was more than 2 years earlier, he was not allowed to offset it against current taxes. But Obama changed the law to allow taxpayers to go further back, and he offset his tax liability in future years by citing his overpayment. So Donald Trump did not avoid paying taxes, he prepaid them. So what's wrong with that? Many taxpayers overpay or have more withheld from their paychecks than they end up owing in taxes. They look forward to a deserved refund each year. Some even use the process as a way of saving money. All that Trump did differently was to leave the money at the IRS and take the refund over several years. A government strapped for cash should reward such conduct, not vilify it. And since no good deed goes unpunished in politics, the president also being skewered for taking a charitable tax deduction of $119 million for agreeing not to build homes on a 200-acre plot in Westchester, New York, and a similar one in Los Angeles. In each case, Trump bought the property planning to build a golf course and homes on them. Both times, the local zoning board refused to allow the development. So, Trump donated the right to develop this land to charity
and took a deduction of $119 million, called a charitable easement. So now the beautiful land in each location will be preserved forever wild as a place of refuge for people, birds, and animals. Beyond these points, several facts emerge. One, Trump never used any illegal means to reduce his tax liability. He always followed the law. Two, he never used his power as president to get the IRS to pull its punches, even though he appoints the director who serves at his pleasure. Three, he took advantage of every way to cut his tax burden. Do you know any taxpayer who doesn't? And that's what I said previously. Everybody looks to pay the least amount of taxes they can. And that's exactly what he did. One thing that nobody is pointing out on the left is that the president has done nothing against the law. Think about this. If you got a $72 million refund, do you think the IRS would cut that check without looking to make sure they could keep some of it? The IRS inspected, signed off, and wrote the check. Just like they will do the same for you when you get a refund. If you get a refund. All this talk about the president's taxes is a distraction. It's a political ploy. Don't get sucked in. And do not be deceived. And here we go. Let's dive into this final segment for this Wednesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hope you're doing well. I hope you and yours are safe, sound, and in good health. And I hope what we've been watching happen in America has brought some things into focus for you. I've heard all of my life that there are those who are working behind the scenes to change the nature of this nation. At one point in our history, everybody was looking for communists behind every bush, turning over all the rocks looking for people who were communist sympathizers. And a lot of people got put on lists, and as that receded in our rearview mirror, a lot of people condemned that time. But today, in the year 2020, in the month of September, at the end of the month of September, we can look around us and we can actually see that that concern was real. It was valid. And what has happened since that time is that the core ideology of communism, the philosophies of Karl Marx, Marxism, have grown roots into our society and infected much of what we cherish in America today. And we are, I believe, at a crossroads, and we have to make a decision about which direction this nation is going to go. And a key element of that decision is who goes to the White House in January of 2021. Because we have two choices on our hands. We have, on one hand, someone who spent 47 years as a member of the Washington elite. Someone who was in office and from time to time would have his hands in legislation which ultimately damaged America and harmed Americans. Mark, what do you mean? Well, black Americans suffered under legislation he passed, and people, children at schools, have been shot and killed because of legislation he ramrodded through. Yeah, Joe Biden's the guy was behind gun-free zones. Yeah, that was Joe Biden's idea. That was what he pushed. That was his progressive liberal solution to a problem that really didn't exist. That was Joe Biden protecting Americans by making certain places target-rich environments for mentally unstable evil people who could go there and know that nobody in those places would shoot back at him because they were all law-abiding citizens and they could just be picked off one by one by one because none of them would be armed. That's what Joe Biden's created. 47 years in office. He has lived off of the taxpayer's dime for 47 years and accomplished little to nothing, which truly benefits America. And who is now so desperate on his third attempt to become president of the United States that although he denied and lied by denying last night that his agenda is the socialist agenda, because everybody who's carving out what he's going to implement if he's elected, they're all radical leftists. He can lie and say that's not the fact, but that is the fact. The choice is between him and the man who is rude, who is abrupt, he is abrasive, he doesn't tolerate BS. He will call you exactly what he thinks to your face. And that makes him, in the words of Joe Biden, not presidential. But it also makes him the right guy for the job at this time in our history. As I said to my sweet wife, Jane, in the run-up to the 2016 election, it may be time for a street fighter in the White House. It may be time for someone who won't take BS off of anybody. Donald Trump may just be the right president for America because he's got a history working in real estate development and developing his fortune. He has a history of having to deal with politicians on both sides of the aisle to whom he has donated both sides of the aisle. He's donated cash to these people because he knows he has to work with these people. So he knows how they operate and he knows how they think. And he's also had to deal with the corruption that is rife in New York City, New Jersey, and other places when it comes to real estate development. He's had to deal with mobsters. He's had to deal with criminals. He's had to deal with he's had to deal with every element in order to do what he has done and to succeed. And he has succeeded in spite of all those people, the politicians and the criminals. But I repeat myself. And I said to my wife, this might be the guy. This might be the time for this man. He may not look presidential. He may not be slick at the podium. He may not be the image of what we think of when we think of a president. But he's probably the right guy for the job. And it turns out I was right. And it turns out that today, at the end of his first term, he's the only candidate that makes any sense for this day. And the evidence of that is that the other side is fighting so hard against him. That the progressive Democrats are allowing cities to burn. The progressive Democrats are allowing thugs to harm other people. The progressive Democrats are allowing our economy to be shut down in state after state after state because it benefits their cause to be able to blame that on the president, which you saw Joe Biden do last night. Joe Biden had the nerve, the gall, to blame the current economic downturn on the President of the United States. who is actually trying to open the economy back up again and is being resisted by every Democrat governor in America. But Republicans are recognizing the value of the man. And they're seeing, not just for political purposes, they're seeing for the future of America, that business as usual isn't the right way to go. A group of 70 senior government officials who worked with various Republican administrations dating back to Richard Nixon has endorsed President Trump for re-election. They did so Monday. They cite his accomplishments on foreign policy and national security. In an open letter, 70 former officials, including governors, senators, national security advisors, military generals, and ambassadors from the Trump, George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, Reagan, Nixon, and Ford administrations, lauded the president for pursuing a strong foreign and national security policy in America's interests. The letter says, "We also believe that a president's duty and loyalty are owed first and foremost to the American people and not to the international community, which is consistent with strengthening our alliances and friendships. For all of these reasons, we have concluded that Donald J. Trump should be reelected as President of the United States." President Trump has, in less than 4 years, achieved a remarkable number of successes on behalf of our nation. So says, hang on here, let me see, who's it? Christopher Burnham, a former deputy national security advisor to Trump. Oh, he was the former assistant secretary of the State Department Undersecretary General of the UN during the George W. Bush presidency. That's what he is, he says. He said that to Fox News. He said his opponents bristle at his methods. The scorecard speaks for itself. America's winning and we want to keep winning. Therefore, we urge our fellow Americans to vote for Donald Trump. Notable signatories include former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, former U.S. Ambassador to Germany Rick Grenell, former Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour. The authors of the letter pointed to Trump's imposition of sanctions on Iran, North Korea, Russia, and China, in particular touting his hard-line stance on the Beijing government, his efforts in securing additional funding from NATO allies, the peace deal he helped broker between Israel and the United Arab Emirates, and the authorization of a drone strike that killed Iran's top security and intelligence commander, General Qasem Soleimani. Quote, "President Trump's foreign policy has strengthened America's national security, advanced the cause of peace in the Middle East, and has held the Chinese, Russian, and Iranian governments accountable. President Trump has and will continue to have the fortitude and leadership to keep Americans safe at home and abroad." You see polls today, and they're flopping one way or another. And I got to remind you that political polls don't actually reflect popular opinion. They don't. Political polling is a tool used to influence popular opinion. The way they're conducted, the questions that are asked, the sample groups are all staged, should I say rigged? That's probably not inaccurate. They're all set up for a desired goal. So who is doing the polling? And who determines what questions are asked? Determines the outcome of the poll. We have to remember that at this point, 4 years ago, there was no chance in heaven or hell that Donald Trump could possibly have been the president of the United States. And every pundit and every politician said so. Nobody believed that our president could have been our president. And you saw it on their faces election night. They all believed the polls. But the polls didn't reflect the reality of a nation. They didn't then, and they don't now. Hey, that's all for today. God bless you. Have a good one. We'll see you tomorrow for the next edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.